Good afternoon, and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we're live from 2 to 3 in the afternoon, Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to be on the program during that time, there is a toll-free number for you. You can call in, and you can have determinative power over the direction the program goes, at least for a portion of it, the portion that you're on the phone. If you call in, you can ask a question on any subject that's relevant to Christianity, religion, the Bible, ethics, you name it. Anything that might be of interest to any Christians or relevant to Christian ideas, feel free to give me a call. If you disagree with me about something, I'll let you know that you can call and say so. Now, not all the Christian shows on the radio will allow you to call in and say that you disagree. I hope that most open-line talk shows would do so, but of course a lot of the Christian programming you hear on the Christian radio all day is pre-recorded and is, it's syndicated throughout the whole country and so forth, and you don't really have any interaction with the person that you listen to. You might disagree with them, but they'll never know it. And you'll never get to balance comment on their show. But you can on this one. If you don't agree with the host here, you can balance comment. You can bring correction. If you think the host is mistaken or just way off base, feel free to give me a call. Our lines are open right now. I guess everybody's out Christmas shopping. Usually we have calls waiting to go on the air by this time, but that's not the case at this moment. So let me give you the number. It's 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090 if you'd like to be on the program today. I'd sure like to have you on. Give me a call, and we will talk to you. Today is Tuesday, and that means that tonight I have what's been for some months now, actually probably close to a couple of years now, a weekly Bible study held in the Santa Cruz area. We hold this meeting in a home in Aptos. And if you would like to come to it tonight, I had announced that this would be our last one for a little while on Tuesday nights because I'm going to be starting in January a Wednesday night study in another location. I didn't want to do both simultaneously, but actually, I don't know. I don't know if this will be the last one. We've got, of course, next Tuesday is Christmas. The following Tuesday is New Year's Day. We will not be having the meetings then. I was figuring we wouldn't have any more on Tuesdays, but we may just need to. I'm trying to finish up Ephesians, and tonight we're going to be talking about the armor of God. We're going to start at Ephesians 6:10, and I was thinking we'd finish the book. Now, some people expressed last week skepticism that I would be able to finish up the book of Ephesians in a single session tonight, and I assured them that that would probably be no problem. The reason is because I don't have to go into great depth, because I have a whole series of lectures on spiritual warfare that covers this stuff in depth, which you can download from the website. However, as I was looking over the material again today, I was thinking, I don't know if I can finish it tonight. So we'll just have to see. If I don't finish tonight, we'll have to, 3 weeks from tonight, finish it up or something. But you can join us tonight. It's at 7 o'clock. And if you would like to get directions to the meeting, if you've never been there before, the number to call for directions is area code 831-851-0444. That's area code 831-851-0444. You call that number, they'll give you directions to the meeting tonight at 7. Be great to meet you. The meeting is there for the purpose of listeners of this program getting to know each other and me and enjoying some time of fellowship together. And it is enjoyable. I'd be glad to have you there. We're going to talk first to Lynn, who's calling from Monterey, California today. Lynn, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're so welcome, and a Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
Thank you. First of all, I wish I had somebody like you in Monterey.
So, well, I am in Monterey. I mean, I'm on the air in Monterey.
I know you are.
Well, I'm actually thinking
a great place to live. You can live in my house.
Oh, well, that's very gracious of you. Actually, you know, we are thinking about starting up a monthly gathering in the Monterey area.
Are you really?
We already have a monthly one in Santa Cruz and a monthly one in Salinas.
Right.
And we have enough people coming to those ones from the Monterey area that we thought, well, maybe we should just have one in the Monterey area so these people don't have to drive so far.
Oh, I think that would be excellent. Excellent. to address my question, you have a tape on Refuse to Be Offended.
Yes.
And I've listened to that twice now because I do become offended. It's mostly in families where they repeat the same thing, and some members are rather offensive, and you talk about seven times, you know, you have to keep forgiving. This last, before Christmas, I can forgive, but I don't want to listen anymore. And is that an offense in itself?
No, it's not wrong. It's not wrong to say, you know, talking to this person is merely aggravating. You know, this person is not civil. This person is not rational. And this person simply is trying to get my goat all the time, so I'd prefer not to talk to that person, for the sake of peace, primarily. Is that the situation you're
yes.
looking at? I mean,
yes.
A family member like that you're likely to see at Christmas time, perhaps?
Well, it's every phone call.
I see.
Is a very critical of everything, including members of the family, and if
I
you
see.
Don't agree. They become very angry. And I thought I was patient, but I'm starting to lose it.
Well, you know, there's nothing in the Bible says you can't confront bad behavior.
Well, you confront two of these members of the family, they become very nasty, nasty, and they'll ring and ring and ring in an attempt to finally destroy any faith you have.
Mm.
And it's very difficult. So I thought to myself, I do listen to that 7 times 7. Okay, you have to forgive. But how many times do you have to forgive?
Well, you know, in the passage that I discussed on that, you know, on that lecture you're talking about,
yes.
In the passage in Luke chapter 17, it says that if your brother sins against you, confront him, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him. And if he does it 7 times in one day, well, and 7 times one day he says, I repent, you must forgive him each time. Now, another passage in Matthew 18 says that you should be prepared to forgive your brother 70 times 7, which suggests that you need to have limitless grace. But the first passage I mentioned in Luke 17, the opening verses, seems to indicate that the person should be told that they are doing something offensive. Now, I realize it's frightening. Some people, the tyrants in the family, seem to be the ones who never get confronted. It's easier to confront people who are nice if they're doing something wrong. But the people who are nice are not the ones who need it as much, you know?
They don't need it, no.
So it really takes some courage on the part of a Christian to, in kindness, say to the person, you know, I really, you know, I don't really care to hear all this gossip and all this negativity about people that I care about.
20,000 times, you know, in a lifetime.
Yeah.
And it still doesn't penetrate. However,
is this person,
am I responsible for their bad behavior?
No, you're not responsible for their bad behavior, but are they professing Christians?
According to our background and everything else, it's, well, I pray. I don't know what they're praying for because they're not demonstrating any better behavior.
Right.
And they're very hurtful things. I wouldn't repeat them because they're so hurtful. And most of them are not true. And
is this a woman?
Uh-huh.
Is she an older woman?
Uh-huh. And
is she an unhappy older woman?
Very. Unhappy.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there's a sense in which you need to have pity on her, but there's also a sense in which you need to, out of love, confront her and say, you know, I only say this because I care about you. And that is that when the conversation goes the way it usually goes in our conversations, it just really gives me a real bad feeling. It makes me wish we weren't having these conversations. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if other people you talk to, if you talk in this way, it might bother them too. I think that people would much rather converse with you if we could talk about something more uplifting. And especially if you're going to say bad things about people that I care about.
Right.
And they're not here to defend themselves.
Right.
You know, if they're not here to defend themselves, I'd rather not hear anything about them. You know, if you feel that way about them, why don't we go talk to them right now? That's what I would suggest. You know, if she begins to say, well, so-and-so did this or said that or is wrong in this way, you should say, you know, well, if you really feel that way, we should go talk to that person right now. Let's go. Let's call them up right now. And that person will probably stop talking that way if you make them accountable. See, it's a coward who will criticize people behind their back, and almost all people who gossip are cowards in that respect. If you say, well, you know, if you really feel that that's true, we should go tell that person. You know, they need to know. And if the person, refrains from going, then it's clear they're very cowardly. They're not willing to let the other person know what it is they're saying about them.
I'm not sure that would work with her. However, I want to know how I can be at peace with myself in these circumstances, because the Bible does say you don't go to any church with anger against or ill feeling.
Go off of your sacrifice, yeah.
But I love the tape, and I refuse to be offended now that I've listened to the tape. And that's hard. I'm practicing that, but it's very hard.
Good for you.
So I need to review it over and over again.
And you know what? When I taught that at the Great Commission School in Oregon that I ran for 16 years, and the staff, many, many times we heard the staff members say, I need to listen to that tape again. And we had 900 tapes on the wall. But they always meant that one. they always said, I need to listen to that tape again.
Oh,
so it's very relevant.
I had my son-in-law listen. And in fact, I don't know whether this was proper or not, but I recorded it on a tape and I was going to send it to her.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought, now she would really be offended.
Well,
thinking that she needed help the way I do.
Yeah. Well, you first of all, Lynn, in addition to being gracious, you need to be courageous. You need to not be intimidated by this person. You know, one reason I think that probably nobody confronts this lady about what she's doing is they know that they will be the brunt of her gossip.
Exactly.
You know, as soon as you become on her bad side, you'll become the brunt of the gossip. And you don't want that happening. However, in all likelihood, you already are.
Yeah.
You know, I was in a room full of Christians once, and they were, everyone, including myself, to my shame, we were talking about some other Christian who was not present, who was doing some things that were controversial, and most of the things that were being said were somewhat critical of that person. And one girl who was in the room who had not said a word through the whole time, after a while she said, gee, I wonder how you guys talk about me when I'm not here. And, you know,
isn't that true?
Yeah, that's true. You know, I mean, you figure if someone will gossip to you about someone else who's not there, they'll probably gossip about you to someone else. And, you know, when someone's gossiping like that, I mean, to me, that was a very profound thing that girl said. And, you know, I remember it now, and this has been 35 years since I heard it. It struck me, you know. I wonder what you guys say about me when I'm not here. Gossip is.
I'm doing that right now.
I'm being
critical of her behavior.
Oh, but no one who's hearing you knows who it is. You're talking more abstractly because we don't know who she is, and
right.
Therefore you're not coloring our opinion about her. But what I'm saying is that she colors your opinion about other people when she gossips to you about them, and that's what, you know. I just think, Lynn, you either have to, you know, grin and bear it. Or, I think even better still, you need to have the courage to say something.
Oh, I have.
to her about it. Okay. And since you've already said something, then the next time she calls and wants to talk to her, just say, you know, I've told you before, this is not really something I want to be talking about. It kind of poisons my mind toward these people, and I don't like that kind of poison in me. You know, so could we talk about something else? And if not, could you talk to somebody else? Maybe you can go talk to somebody else about me.
Oh, can I do that?
Say what's that?
The last remark you made. Talk about me to somebody else?
Yeah, just say, hey, I feel much more comfortable instead of you talking to me about these people. Why don't you go talk to them about me?
Hey. Oh, I like that. That's good. Good advice. Lectures, I thank you very much. I know you have people waiting, and when you're in Monterey, that would be a blessing.
Lynn, it's great to hear from you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye now. Now, for those of you who, those of you unfamiliar with the lecture that Lynn was referring to, at our website, we have about 900 lectures free to listen to, MP3 files. You can download them for free. You don't have to give us your email. We don't ask you to register. You just go and take them and go away, and we'll never even know you were there. And there's hundreds of them, but one of the very most listened to, one of the very most commented about, is this one that she was referring to. And if you haven't heard it, you go to www.thenarrowpath.com. Click on the link that says topical lectures, and I believe quite near the top of the list, on the left of a page, I think you'll see this one. It's called Refuse to be Offended. Refuse to be Offended. That's the name of it. And it's only about 45 minutes long. It's one of the shortest lectures on our site. Most of them are 90 minutes long, so maybe that's why people listen to it more than others, too. Anyway, check it out. It may change your life. Could. It's changed the lives of a number of people. And as you heard, sometimes it has to be listened to more than once. Let's talk to John next from Portland, Oregon. And we have a line open for you also. If you'd like to be on the program today, you're listening to The Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg. If you'd like to be on the program, the number to call is 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. John, thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve. Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
I don't know how this will work out, but I have something I would like to share with other believers, but I get a check in my spirit when I try to share it indiscriminately.
Well, you're talking to a fairly broad audience now. That's kind of indiscriminate.
I beg your pardon?
I said when you share something on the radio, it's kind of indiscriminately sharing it. I mean, you don't know who's listening.
Right. Plus, it's recorded, and I don't have any control over who gets on your archives and listens again.
That too.
You know. So what I'd like to do maybe is share some of these things with people who are of like mind. And it seems to me like Dennis the Millennialist is one, and also Bob of Portland is another one, who might understand and appreciate what I have. So I was wondering if there's any way that I could contact them.
Well, John, have you ever been to our forum, our Bible forum, at our website?
Yes.
Are you a registered user? Do you post things there?
No.
Well, it costs nothing. You can register there, and you can post your ideas there, and there might be a lot of people there who agree with you or at least want to interact with you about what you have to say. That's what I would recommend, because obviously I'm not going to have you give out your phone number over the air here, but or your contact information. But if you want to go to our forum, you just go to thenarrowpath.com, and there's a link there that says Bible Forum. Once you go there, it'll say register, and you can register with a username and a password, and you get on there, and then you can post anything you want to, as long as it's not offensive. And even sometimes people post things that are offensive, and we let them get away with it because we refuse to be offended. But the point is, that would be the best way for you to get your ideas out there to maybe a broader audience of our listeners, and possibly connect with some people who resonate with what you want to say.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. I'll try that.
Okay, John, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay, God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, our lines are open again, 1-800-438-5090. If you want to call, we are looking. I'm looking at the screen, waiting for it to light up with your brilliant ideas. And I don't mean to intimidate you with that statement, because if your ideas are not that brilliant, you're welcome to be here too. Just if you got a question about the Bible or a difference of opinion to express, feel free to give me a call. A couple times today already, we've had occasion to make reference to things on the website. You know, day after day after day after day goes by on this program without me saying a word about our website, just because when the calls are picked, I take the calls and forget to make announcements. But if you've never been to thenarrowpath.com, you should go there. You'd be surprised. Like I said, we've got about 900 free MP3 files, lectures, verse by verse through the entire Bible, by yours truly, as well as several hundred lectures that are of a topical biblical sort. You can just download them and take them. And then there's also the Bible Forum that I just mentioned to John. That's another link there where you can interact in writing on a sort of a message board with a number of other people who, I guess, originally found it through our broadcast. I suppose most of them listen to the program. So those are some real avenues of learning and of communication that you can be a part of through our website. There's other stuff there, too. There's written articles. There's my comic books that I drew back in the 70s. They can be read there and downloaded. There's a link there, too. They're called the Growth Books. There's all kinds of stuff there. And there's not one thing there for sale. We do not sell anything, even my book. Now, my book is for sale in bookstores, and it's for sale through Amazon.com and so forth, but we don't sell it. We don't sell anything. And that book is, of course, Revelation 4 Views. If you want the book, you can link from our website to Amazon and order it from them. But we don't have any products for sale at our site. It's thenarrowpath.com. Like I say, if you haven't been there, you don't know what you're missing. Let's go to talk to Juan from Salinas, California. Hello, Juan.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Good to hear from you.
I wanted to ask you, there was a question asked to another individual, and he didn't know how to answer it. And he was, and I was standing there, I heard it, and so I figured I'd call you up, and it's it. And it is, the question that was asked is, how did Jesus know God was his Father? And he didn't know how to answer that. Is there scripture or anything like that? So I could talk to this person and kind of let, like when he's asked that again.
Was this somebody else you heard on the radio or just someone in conversation?
Conversation.
I see.
He's always doing Bible studies, and they asked him, and he didn't know how to answer that.
Right.
So I needed some scripture, or maybe you know.
Well, that's a good question. How did Jesus know God was his Father? It'd be relatively easy to say when he knew, but how he knew is a little more difficult. You know, a lot of people just assume that since Jesus was God in the flesh, that he always knew everything. But, of course, when you think about it, the Bible makes it clear that Jesus didn't know everything. He himself said so. You know, when they said, when will your coming be? He said, I don't know that. The angels don't know it. I don't know it. Only God the Father knows that. So it's clear that while Jesus was on earth, there were things he didn't know. And it seems obvious that when he popped out of the womb on the first Christmas day as a newborn baby, he didn't have in his head all the information that he had later in his life. He had to learn to read just like we do. He had to learn how to speak. He had to learn who his family was. And in other words, he had to learn stuff just as a baby. He didn't know everything. When Jesus came to earth, he laid aside some of his divine attributes for the time being, including omniscience. So as a child, he became aware of the world around him and of who he was and so forth gradually, just like everybody else does. But when and how did he come to be aware that he was the unique Son of God? I don't know the answer exactly. It is possible that his parents told him, because Mary was told before Jesus was born, actually before she was pregnant.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, his parents.
Yeah, it is possible. It's also possible, of course, that the Father revealed that to him in some way that is so subjective that we would not have any way of knowing. We do know that Jesus at least knew this by the time he was 12 years old. We don't know if he knew it before that, but we know that when he was 12 years old, in Luke chapter 2, he was found by his parents teaching or talking to the teachers in the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Did you not know that I must be about my father's business?" Obviously referring to God as his father. And so he was aware, at least by age 12, and that could be when he was bar mitzvah, he was at least aware by then that he was the son of God, that God was his father. And he used that term in a way that was not commonly used. We often speak of God as our father, but we learned that from him, Jesus. We learned it from Jesus. Jesus was the first one to be talking about God as our father. And so when Jesus said, "I must be about my father's business," in reference to God, he was making a radical statement that God was his father in a way that the Jews never spoke of God being their father. And so he obviously had awareness at that time. How much theological content there was to his awareness, I don't know at that point. We know that when he was baptized at age 30, the voice of God spoke from him and said, "You are my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased." And, you know, whether the father was just telling him what he already knew there, or whether he was conferring to him some deeper awareness of his sonship, I cannot say. But it would be either Jesus learned it at the knee of his parents who told him,
mm-hmm.
or else he got it directly from God the Father. And it's possible that both are true.
Okay.
It's possible that he heard it first from his parents, but that it became something he became aware of by personal revelation from his father later on.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds, well, just like when we grew up,
yeah.
They would tell us, "That's your dad, this is your father." So,
that's right. Like if you grew up in a home with a stepdad, let's say your real dad had left while your mom was pregnant, you never knew your real dad, and you had a stepdad who's not your real dad, or you were adopted by both parents, at some point they've got to tell you, you know, "This man is not your actual father. You know, you have another father." And Mary must have told Jesus that, or Joseph must have told Jesus that at some point in his childhood, I would think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds reasonable. That sounds a little good answer.
Well, we try to give reasonable answers here.
Well, yeah, that's what you're saying is, because I went home and I was thinking about what you know, everything that you're saying on the radio and stuff. And I was pondering, I was thinking about, you know, maybe it was his parents, and everything that you're saying is like being confirmed and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Not every single word, but certain words that you say, maybe it was his parents, maybe it was this, and you know, I thought about all those things. So I, you know, more and more that on the same track and stuff, so, you know.
Well, it excites me to know that you're not only listening, but that you're thinking on your own about these things. That's great. I hope all our listeners are like you in that way.
All right. Okay, thanks.
God bless you, Juan.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right, our next conversation will be with Roger from Albany, Oregon. If you'd like to be on the program, we have lines open at 1-800-438-5090. That's 1-800-438-5090. Roger, I imagine you probably have to get back to work quickly, so I'll give you the opportunity to give your question here.
So I'm just going to call and listen to your response on the radio.
Okay.
I've been involved in a Christian forum on the Internet, and we've been talking quite a bit about the nature of the fall, and that's why I've asked you some questions recently about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, et cetera.
Yeah.
I guess, and I'm still pondering about a lot of these things, my question really is concerning the nature of sin is what I, and then of sin getting into humanity today.
Mm-hmm.
Paul says in Romans, "I find
another law
in my members."
Right.
And to my understanding, that is the law of sin and death.
That's right.
What I want to talk you to talk about is, I know that when they ate the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, their eyes were opened, they understood good and evil, etc. But I guess I'm pondering about how did sin get into man and how is it passed on from generation to generation? Romans also says, through one man, sin entered into the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to talk about the nature of sin in humanity and this law of sin that Paul said was in my members. You know, I guess previously I've had some of my thoughts challenged in this discussion I've been in on this Christian forum. And I'm just really thinking a lot about these things. Just would like to hear your thoughts.
Okay, Roger.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for your call, brother.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, yeah, Roger has called several times in the past few weeks asking related questions. I don't know if I'm answering, you know, along the lines of where your curiosity lies or not. Though, if you ask how did sin get into the human race and how is it passed along, you're asking questions that are not really answered in the Bible. Now, because they're not answered in the Bible, and yet they're good questions, and many thinking people would have, curiosity about that, lots of people are not content to be ignorant of things that they're curious about. Have you noticed that? Theologians often, if the Bible doesn't answer a question, they'll make up an answer and say, this makes sense to me. This happens all the time. That's what's gone on at a lot of the ecumenical councils. They'll discuss, what is the nature of the hypostatic union between the two natures of Christ? And so they'll hash it out and come up with what they consider to be an orthodox answer, but the Bible doesn't have a word to say about it. As far as I can tell, the Bible doesn't say anything about the hypostatic union. But theologians don't like to be ignorant, and so they don't like to be, to have holes in their knowledge. The same is true when we talk about the, how sin got into our members, how it's passed along. You know, the Bible does make it very clear that sin began with the first couple, Adam and Eve, when they sinned, and they were the human race. Okay, they were not just, two people, like you and I are two people, but they were the human race. There were no other humans on the planet. The whole human race sinned, and sin somehow became part of their inner inclinations. They began to be not only aware of good and evil, but they had strong urges, it would appear, toward evil. At least that's been the case of every person who's been born since then. I assume that was their experience too. And when they had that, that got passed down to their children. Or maybe passed down isn't even the right word. All their children were in them already. All of us were in Adam and Eve at that time. Over the course of the past 6,000 years, all of us have come out of their loins, as it were, because they are our great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, and they're related to everybody else that we've ever been related to. We were in them. And when they sinned, what became them, what they became, is what we became. And it seems to me that sin has an analogy. And I sometimes use this analogy because we understand it better. Seems to have an analogy in addictions, drug addictions. And, when parents are drug addicts and they conceive a child, a lot of times the child is born a drug addict. And, why? Because the parent was and the child was in them. And they have this addiction. Now, that doesn't mean that the child is guilty of what their parents did, or that if the drug addiction were punishable by law, that the child would be punished for it. The parents would be punished because they're the ones who did the deed. The child would be born innocent but addicted. Innocent but in bondage. And that apparently is what has happened to the human race. Now, how is it passed down? Most things are passed down, of course, through genetics. Though I don't really know that drug addiction is passed down by genetics. But the thing is, people have said, well, is there a gene for sin? Is it hereditary in that sense? I think not. I think it's talking about a spiritual proclivity that's part of human nature. Not everything in human nature is coded for in DNA. I don't know how much is and how much isn't, but there is a spiritual side that is in some sense independent, of the biology. And I don't know how it's passed down. All I know is that perhaps we should see it this way. When Adam and Eve started having kids, throwing kids, they were throwing kids that were just like them. It says of Seth in Genesis chapter 5, Adam bore a son in his own image and his own likeness. Well, it's interesting because God made Adam in his own image and his own likeness, that is God's. But by the time Adam fell, he began having children in his image and in his likeness. Well, that'd be understandable enough, but Adam by this time was a sinner, and so his children were sinners too. I don't know how it's passed down, And I don't know exactly what's being discussed at this internet forum that you're involved in, so I don't know what details to put up. But I do know this. Right? I shouldn't say I know, because I might be wrong. But I think what I believe the Bible teaches and what I believe is observable is that all people are born with a proclivity to sin, as it were, an addiction. An addiction to sinning. And we cannot stop sinning just because we might wish we could. You can't go to a 12-step program for sin and you know, recover from sin by doing the 12 steps. You have to be delivered from sin. You have to be born again. You have to be given spiritual resources to overcome sin in your life. You need to walk in the Spirit so that you don't fulfill the lust of the flesh. That means everything in your nature militates against holiness and favors a life of selfishness. That's what sin in my members is. And I cannot tell you how it's passed on because the Bible doesn't tell me. Now, there may be theologians who would be glad to tell you because, like I say, where the Bible is silent, theologians often are not content to remain silent. But I'm going to have to remain in ignorance on things the Bible doesn't tell me, especially about mysterious stuff like that. So you probably came to the wrong place asking for insights on this when you came to me, because all I can tell you is the Bible doesn't answer your question. I don't know of any verse in the Bible that answers your questions, and therefore if any answer I give would have to be a guess. And, you know, I might be prepared to make a guess, but I really can't give an authoritative answer. And if you're dialoguing on this with people on the internet, they're going to want some authority other than, you know, Steve Gregg guessed this. Steve Gregg's guesses don't carry any weight at all as far as I'm concerned. So, brother, I would just say don't get too deeply immersed in this particular problem, since it can't be the most important thing, or else God would have said something more about it. I think God has told us all that we need to know about things that are important to Him. There's other things that are important to us, but we need to bring our, by being transformed and renewed by the transformation of our minds and so forth, that we basically need to come around to a place where we agree with God about what's important, and therefore we're content not to know the things that He was content not to tell us. We got our lines full. I better go back to the phones, but John from Portland is next. Hi, John. Welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you, Steve. By the way, Merry Messiahmas. I did want to ask you, I was reading in Ephesians a couple of weeks ago, it's Ephesians chapter 2, verse 2, something that I had never thought about before. It was talking about the spirit of darkness, which seems to talk about Satan, dwelling in unbelievers. And I know that there's the old nature, but this is almost one of those passages that would be like a baptism for the dead or something, but it almost would seem from that one passage that people who are unbelievers have a satanic spirit in them.
Well, it says he's the spirit that works in the sons of disobedience. He says he's the spirit, the devil, the prince of the power of the air, is the spirit that now works in
right.
sons of disobedience. Yeah. I don't know if that means that people who are not Christians have the devil himself living in them, or
probably not.
Just,
yeah.
Or if it just means that he works in them. He works. He manipulates them. He manipulates their inner workings. You know. I mean, he suggests things to the mind, and so forth. I mean, certainly the devil is interested in what's going on inside a person and is at work in the inner motivations and so forth. But I think it may be through temptation and through outward influence. I can't be 100% sure about what the Bible doesn't say, certainly. And but my impression is that the devil certainly is not actually inside of every person.
Sure.
Because I believe the devil is an actual person himself, not a human person, but an individual spirit. And now, sometimes what is done by demons is attributed to the devil in the Bible. For example, when they said that Jesus cast out demons by Beelzebub, the prince of demons, Jesus said, if Satan casts out Satan. Now, that means he's referring to Beelzebub as Satan, also as the demons that are being cast out are also Satan. You know, Satan cast out Satan. Seems like the whole satanic organization can be called Satan, including the demons. And So, I mean, if we say Satan is at work in the children of disobedience, it could mean that they have demons in them. And certainly in Paul's day, a great number of them probably did, because they were idol worshippers. They were worshipping demons.
Yeah, a lot of idol chatter.
Well, there's a great deal of, yeah, there was a great deal of bondage to demons in biblical times, and there still is. There still is in many parts of the world. But I don't know if it would be, I don't think it would be safe to say that all non-Christians have demons inside them. At least Jesus, in dealing with people, didn't cast demons out of everybody. There, you know, there were some who were, had special needs for that, who were said to be demonized. Others apparently were not.
But from your understanding, you know, and I didn't think it meant that Satan was in every unbeliever, but from your understanding from that passage, it does mean that you would think that there is demonic influence on unbelievers then.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
They are in bondage to Satan, and he does work in their heads. You know, he does work in them.
And that's the Steve Gregg Magisterium. I can quote that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can. We're going to make a creed out of that, and anyone who can sign on to that will be Orthodox from now on.
Thank you, brother, and seriously, Merry Christmas, and I appreciate you when you're coming back to the Pacific Northwest.
I hope it won't be long. I don't have a date set, but I'm kind of busy. I'm going to be gone overseas in January and in February, just a week each.
Okay.
And that kind of makes it difficult for me to plan a trip to Oregon, too, but I probably will try to fit one in one of those months.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, John. God bless you. Thanks for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. We're going to talk next to Sean calling from Salem, Oregon. Sean, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. How you doing?
Good. I haven't talked to you for a while.
I know. It's good to hear your voice again.
Yeah.
You gonna stump me again with a hard question?
Well, sort of. It's half a comment, half a question.
Okay.
The Bible doesn't say anything about when, you know, how the serpent talked to Eve.
About that?
Yeah. It doesn't say anything about her being scared when he did that.
That's true.
And so I was thinking, I mean, I'm probably wrong on this, but could it possibly be a possibility that animals could talk before the fall?
That has crossed my mind, and I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. You know who C.S. Lewis is?
Yeah.
Yeah, he thought that. C.S. Lewis believed that animals could talk before the fall. I don't think all animals could talk before the fall. But you know, there are some animals that can talk even now. I mean, parrots and minor birds and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam and Eve were brand new. I mean, they were still discovering.
Mm-hmm.
You know what existed in nature, and they may have already been aware that some animals can mimic speech. I don't know if they had figured out that those animals are just copying, or if they thought maybe they could talk just like people can.
Yeah.
In any case, you're right. You would think that Eve would be suspicious, at least, when an animal starts talking to her, having a conversation with her, unless she was already aware that, you know, animals can talk. So I don't know if it's like C.S. Lewis thought, that animals actually could talk before the fall, or if it's rather that just some animals can talk, and Eve was so new she didn't know which ones could be expected to talk and which ones could not, so she wasn't really all that suspicious when the serpent began talking to her.
Yeah. Yeah, but I just found it interesting.
It is. It's an interesting thought. And,
You
know, it shows you've been thinking about the scriptures, because those kind of thoughts only come up when you're thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but the Bible offices, well, in the New Testament, there's not going to be any death or so, you know, like that.
Right.
But I would think if it would be like the Garden of Eden before the fall, I think that people wouldn't be able to get scared either.
Wouldn't be able to get scared?
Yeah.
Okay, so that, like, Eve would not have any way of becoming frightened because she was not subject to dying, right?
Yeah, right.
It's interesting because in Hebrews chapter 2, it says in verse 14 that when Jesus died, He died to deliver us from the power of the devil,
mm-hmm.
and to deliver us, to deliver people who all their lifetime had been subject to bondage through the fear of death. Now, that's a complex sentence. So that's Hebrews 2, 14 and 15. But it basically said that people have been controlled by the devil because he's kept them in bondage or slavery because of the fear of death. And it's true, of course, ever since the fall, people have been afraid to die. But you're also correct that Eve wouldn't have any fear of death before the fall. She wouldn't, although God had warned them,
mm-hmm.
and the day you eat of it, you'll die. But they didn't mm-hmm. they didn't have a clear idea of what death was, probably.
Yeah.
They've never seen anyone die.
Yeah, they probably didn't even know what death was.
Yeah.
So, but that's all.
Hey, you're going to be a philosopher like C.S. Lewis, I think.
Maybe.
All right. Are you already stumping your parents with these questions?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, because your parents are pretty sharp people.
They are.
They know a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, you can stump me anytime you want right here.
All righty.
Okay, Sean.
Merry Christmas.
God bless you. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Let's talk to Sean, I think, is still 11 years old. He's the oldest of a fairly large brood. His parents are friends of mine who actually worked at our school, the Great Commission School, for 5 years. And they actually ran the office and the tape ministry. So, and they're very well-schooled Christian people. And obviously Sean is also, he and his siblings are homeschooled. Let's talk next to Bob calling from Portland, Oregon. Bob, welcome to the Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Steve. You know, I was listening, and it says here in Romans 5:12, therefore, as through one man, sin entered the world. Sin entered the world.
Right.
And death through sin, so that death passed unto all men, for that all sinned.
Yeah, and I don't know that anyone's questioned that here.
Yeah. Well, of course, we receive forgiveness of sins when we die in the waters of baptism and are reborn, and we receive the Spirit of God, like Peter said in Acts, the second chapter, to the Jews who became Christians. And, well, anyway, and then as far as sin goes, of course, Paul was troubled by that, and that he always wanted to think the good, but sometimes he had trouble, and that was in Romans, the seventh chapter. And, of course, as the eighth chapter says, there is therefore now no condemnation for them that are in Christ Jesus. We have a spiritual unity. And for the law of the Spirit of Christ, of life in Christ Jesus, made us free from the law of sin and death. So Christ is our righteousness. And
okay, yeah. All those says, are you responding? Are you responding to Roger's question?
Yeah. And in Ephesians it says the flesh lusts against the spirit against the flesh. There's that warfare going on, and we need to bring our minds, of course, to think along the way God wants us to think.
That's true. Now, Roger's question was, of course, how is sin passed down?
Yeah, well,
from Adam to us.
I was thinking we received the knowledge of good and of evil at the time that Adam and Eve ate the fruit. And, of course, that knowledge passed down through the children. And it's been a real battle to keep ourselves going the way God wants us to go, I'd say. What do you think?
Well, I certainly agree with that. It is a battle to keep going in the way of righteousness, because we are resisting a sinful tendency in our nature.
Yeah,
the question is, I guess, why would, even if Adam and Eve sinned, why would their child be born more prone to sin than Adam and Eve were prone to sin earlier in their lives? In other words, why would this tendency to sin that they acquired through sinning, why would that be automatically passed on to their children?
Well, and because of the eating of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil,
okay.
I would say. We have that knowledge.
Yeah, there's not any question that that's when it happened.
Yeah, but how do you know it doesn't continue through the children?
Well, I think it does.
Yeah,
I think
well,
it does. I'm not denying that. That's, yeah, you're not
well,
proving a point that I'm denying. Yeah.
The tree of knowledge of good and evil. They knew they shouldn't be naked. And so
that's
they
right.
sewed fig leaves together.
You know, that's an interesting thing, too, because when Adam and Eve came to know good and evil, they suddenly knew they were naked and became self-conscious and wanted to cover themselves up. Children who are newborns and toddlers are not self-conscious about being naked in public. They don't have a clue
no.
if there's anything inappropriate. But children do reach a certain age, even apart from social conditioning, I believe, where they just kind of suddenly are aware they're naked and want to dress privately. I've noticed that a lot of kids reach that age around 5 or 6, and I've wondered sometimes, in doing so, have they crossed a threshold that resembles coming to know good and evil? When Adam and Eve knew good and evil, that's the first thing, was they suddenly realized that they'd been naked all along, but all of a sudden it mattered. Didn't matter before.
Yeah, well, we probably have that knowledge of good and evil, and it's, for us, God knows good and evil, and he doesn't let evil bother him at all. But, when we get our new bodies, we won't have to worry about that anymore, I guess.
I'm looking forward to that, Bob. I'm sure you are, too. And I'm going to have to run because the music's about ready to start playing, and I'm going to have to sign off here. But thank you for your call.
God bless you.
God bless you,
bye-bye.
Too. Bye-bye now. All right. You've been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. Actually, I miscalculated. We're about a minute away from the music starting. I thought it was going to start right now, but I can't walk down the street and chew gum mentally at the same time, so I make a lot of mistakes broadcasting. I'm not a professional. I'm not a professional broadcaster. I'm just a lowly amateur Bible teacher, and broadcasting is something I stumbled into. Anyway, you have been listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. And as I said earlier, we certainly hope you will visit our website if you've never been there because of the many resources that are there. You will not find anyone requiring you to pay anything for the resources there. Though there is a link there if you wish to donate. There's a PayPal link. You can donate to the ministry using your debit card. I don't want you to use your credit card because I don't want you to go into debt. I don't believe in debt. But if you have money you wanted to donate and don't want to put it in the mail, you can use the debit card at the PayPal link, or you can send us a check if you'd like to help us stay on the air. I don't usually go into much detail about this, and I won't now, but the fact is it's expensive to be on the air. You're hearing a lot of ministries say that now, and that's why I don't like to say it very often, because I figure you hear it from everybody else so much. But what you hear from them is true of us, too. We are supported by your donations. We have big radio bills to pay also. And if you want to help us out, you can either do it through the PayPal link at our site, or you can write to us. The address is The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 3633, Santa Cruz, California, 95063. You can also get that address at our website, too, if you didn't get it just now. The website is www.thenarrowpath.com, just like the name of the show, thenarrowpath.com. And you can get those resources I mentioned there, and there's more than what we've mentioned. It's quite a panoply of armor for your Christian walk and weapons for your warfare. If you want to join us tonight, if you live in the Santa Cruz area, we have our Tuesday night meeting in a home in Aptos. That's at 7 o'clock. If you want directions to that, you can call this number, area code 831-851-0444. Again, if you want to come to the meeting in Aptos tonight at 7 o'clock and want directions, the number is area code 831-851-0444. And that's about all I got time for today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. We'll continue our discussion. Remember to tune us in every day from 2 to 3, and you can call in when you have questions. My name is Steve Gregg. I thank you for joining us. Until tomorrow, may God bless you. We'll talk again real soon.